The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 That was a very nice one. Welcome to Beyond episode 499. We are very close to 500. We're going to go over some of those plans soon. This week, we have a very exciting show. We're going to go over some games of E3, the final wrap-up of some of our favorite things of the show, and some notable things that weren't there. We're going to talk about Nex Machina, which is a huge game this week, from Housemarque. Talk a little bit about cross-platform play and whether or not Sony is holding that up. But yeah, just a bunch of stuff. So first off, my name is Marty Sliva, joined by Brian Altano.
Hey, baby.
Andrew Goldfarb.
I lost my printout of the run of show, and I don't know what's going to happen.
How will you follow along? Share, what's wrong with you?
It's, and,
I got a piece of paper right here. We'll share.
And Zach Ryan.
Here I am.
Welcome, boys. So we're going to talk a little bit about E3 in a little bit. And first off, if you didn't catch all of our E3 coverage, Zach, we did so much.
Yeah, we did over 40 hours of live coverage from E3, which is a Herculean task for all of us involved, you guys included.
Yeah. So I remember that part of the movie Hercules when he did 40 hours.
Yeah, so it was.
Also, let's give Zach a round of applause for putting the whole show together because he's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. It was killing that lion.
Yeah.
It was finding all those Thunderbolts and then 40 hours of live programming.
Yeah. It's a great film.
Yeah.
Everyone says it's the best Disney movie.
Obviously, a bunch of folks watched it live, but if folks didn't watch it live, you can watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, you can find all 3 days, all 5 days of our streams just broken out as full days if you have 9 hours to commit to watching that sort of content. But then there's also a lot of VOD stuff, depending on like what you're looking for. Like Brian and Marty hosted a Far Cry segment that did really well, that has a bunch of gameplay in it, and you can find that really easy. Yeah. There's stuff for Spider-Man, Uncharted, you know, the heavy hitters.
Ooblets.
Sure. And then there's a lot of smaller stuff too, like Battle Chasers Night War. There, we did a cool interview with Tim Schafer for Ooblets. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of fun stuff out there for E3. Coverage.
Awesome. E3 is done, but it's not forgotten. Now it's on to Comic-Con.
On to Comic-Con and then Gamescom.
Yay.
Talking about actual games, Nex Machina.
Woo!
That is sort of the big Sony release this week. That is the newest game from Housemarque. Kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, so...
Sort of, yeah.
Housemarque was on our show talking about Matterfall.
Yeah.
Right? And then they also just put out Nex Machina, sort of... unceremoniously, mm-hmm. It just sort of dropped. And I kind of wonder, like, how many teams does Housemarque have working at any given time? Because this game has such a fantastic level of polish, and it's so much fun to play, and there's obviously a lot of time and talent put behind it. And now it's just here on your PlayStation 4 and ready to blow your eyeballs up with all that pixels.
Yeah, I just want somebody to buy them so badly, because it's just like
it's so weird that they're not under their umbrella.
Honestly, like, after, like, Super Stardust and Resogun and now this, it's just like they're so good at what they do. But they have to keep the lights on, so they also made, like, the Angry Birds trilogy port for Wii.
Yeah.
It's, like, such a weird situation to be in.
Yeah.
I think they're so incredible, and this game is perfect. It's, like, honestly, like, it feels, like, so solidly in their wheelhouse. It's, like, exactly what I want them to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, so how does this... Obviously, you mentioned Stardust, and you mentioned Resogun. So how does this sort of mechanically compare to those?
I mean, it's very similar. It's a twin-stick shooter in the same way that a lot of those games, you know, those games are. It's gorgeous and frantic and fast-paced and... dangerous. Yep. And yep. I saw Brian playing it at his desk earlier today.
Yeah, I really dig it. I think I did the interview about Matterfall at E3, yeah. which I think some people...
That's a side-scroller sort yeah. of, yeah. Uh-huh.
So I think that feels more like a deviation from anything they've done before, but this definitely feels more sort of Super Stardust Alienation yeah. with a little bit of Rezogun. You've got the classic mechanic of saving the green human people scientists.
They really love
guys.
Those little things.
They really do.
They love scientists.
Someone has to look out for them. Yeah. But everything else is a top-down twin-stick shooter of basic evolution of Robotron, basically, yeah. or Smash TV, the mm-hmm. games that, you know, were really big in the arcade scene for a very long time and then went away. And it does that classic Housemarque thing where something explodes into a billion voxels.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very tough. I think the main mechanic here that I'm still getting the hang of is that sort of dash.
Yeah.
yeah, which if you played Mr. Shifty recently, yeah. Kind of feels like that. I dig it a lot. You're fighting waves of enemies. But the cool thing about that is that instead of being like Geometry Wars where you're in this sort of big open play field, it's you're small on, yeah. areas.
Those you, like tight spaces.
It's sort of these yeah. like, it's, yeah. it's you kind of work your way through. So there's five worlds, 15 levels apiece, mm-hmm. and you work your way through these sort of like top-down dioramas, basically, where there's destructible pieces of the environment that will release additional enemies or like open up like hidden power-ups or like, you know, Brian mentioned saving the scientists. Some of this, there's 3 to 5 in each level, and occasionally they'll be hidden in a box or like behind a yeah. wall or something, and so you can destroy a piece of the level and open up another area that you can find another one. So your main objectives, like in any given level, you want to find those scientists first, and that doubles your multiplier, so you can rack up higher, like more points
gotcha,
each time.
Right.
Yeah.
So how do you complete a level?
So clear you just clear out all the enemies.
Okay.
Yeah. And so sometimes you'll defeat all the enemies and warp to the next board before you've collected all the power-ups there
gotcha.
or saved all the scientists or something, and then that kind of spurns you to go back and play through it again.
Yeah.
So I played through the whole game on Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. Just at the rookie level to kind of get my feet wet. I'm not a twin stick shooter guy. I'm bad at video games to begin with, but I started at the easiest setting and immediately picked it back up on normal mode and started working my way through the arcade mode mm-hmm. again.
Yeah.
The arcade mode is sort of the premier single player experience here, but you can also do like online co-op and stuff like that.
It's definitely challenging, yeah. which I really appreciate. I think that like the interesting thing about it is it doesn't feel like to compare it to something like Geometry Wars, which is kind of endless and you get into this zen, I think you have that in smaller doses and then it pulls you out and drops you somewhere else on the map. The diorama thing's really a good, very astute because I think
it changes it so much. Like it feels almost, it reminded me, I've barely played any of it, but just like the little bit I've played weirdly reminded me of almost like a Fire Emblem-y type thing where it's like you have to, not really, like it's not the grid-based or anything, but just in terms of like opening up the play environment and like yeah. that affecting
well,
what
the
you
design,
do.
The design is inherently grid-based. Right, yeah. because you're looking at it top down, and you've got a certain number of squares, and some of them are blocked off by enemies, or some of them are blocked off
and
by
that's,
walls.
That's
and
exactly like, yeah. what I mean. Like when you have to like factor in, it's not just about like shooting an enemy, because I think like Rezogun like created obstacles for you, but like essentially it was just like a shooter, and it was just like taking stuff down. This feels like there's more of a strategy element to it, which
yeah.
I think mm-hmm. is like really
so,
welcome.
Yeah. That was one of the things that I wanted to touch upon is that this game just adds layers and layers as you get further in. So initially you're trying to rescue the scientists, and then you're learning how to balance the power-ups that they throw at you, and then you're learning that you can destroy beacons hidden in each level that will award you more points, and then there's other like collectibles that you can find in each
yeah.
level, and it just stacks on each world. You get another element added to it. It's really, really smart the way that it teaches you to play, in the fact that it doesn't really, like it mm-hmm. just kind of throws you in and says, you know, have at it.
Yeah.
But you get power-ups like Brian was talking about the dash, which kind of weirdly works like the roll in Dark Souls. Like you're invincible
yeah.
for those frames.
Oh, for the couple of frames.
And then so it like, charges back up.
Yeah, so yeah. you have the ability to dash underneath a laser or dash past an enemy. And so like one of the things that you can do is if an enemy is attacking one of the scientists, because you have a certain amount of time to rescue each scientist before they get killed by an enemy, you can dash between enemies, grab the scientists, and dash out. And you can find power-ups that give you a triple dash. You can find power-ups that give you a shield. One of them is like a dash explosion. That's my favorite. You can just dash into a group of enemies, and it explodes outward and just kills.
Which is awesome because it
them.
Turns a defensive move into an offensive move, which completely changes the strategy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I think a lot of that is that sort
but
of...
only for one time.
Like, yeah, one time.
It's a one-time strategy.
So you have to... You want to save it for, like, a big group of enemies
yeah.
or, like, a big boss-type enemy, because the enemies do scale. It's not just, like, kind of grunts that you're fighting constantly. And then you have these, like, kind of, like, monster closets
yeah.
that you want to take out first because they'll just keep spawning enemies. So instead of fighting wave
sort of like those
wave,
things in Gauntlet, like the pile
yeah,
of bones where
yeah,
the enemies
yeah.
keep coming
so
out.
So it gets very micromanagerial in that you're like but in a fun way, where you're like, I want to save the scientists first, take out the monster closets, then take out the big guys because they're going to go for this other scientist that's over here. So it gets really interesting.
Yeah, and if you're terrible at video games like me and you die a lot, you learn how to work your way around the board in a way that makes sense, or it becomes a way of like, okay, if I do 1, 2, 3 scientists first, then I can back up and fight these guys here, right, and then jump over here and save these two scientists. And like,
how long are like each level? You said 5 worlds, 15 levels apiece.
Yeah.
Like, are they short, like,
I mean,
a minute?
It's sort of dependent on how proficient you are at playing the game. Like, you can blow through one of the waves of enemies in a level in probably a minute.
Yeah.
So you can play the game top to bottom in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get, on rookie, you get unlimited continues. On normal, I think you get 99 continues.
And yeah, then, which is basically unlimited
continues. Yeah, I mean, your continues deplete on each level of difficulty, sure, and then enemies speed up. So, I mean, you're looking at like these exponential increases in difficulty.
Yeah, yeah,
it could take you hours to finish a run through the whole thing. But, you know, for five worlds, 15 levels per world, it's sort of dependent on your skill.
I like the idea of playing on like just a basic setting and clearing it in 45 minutes. I don't feel like there's enough PS4 games where you can sit down and like one coin them like you could with arcades.
Yeah.
You know, just like I mean I grew up playing arcade games like X-Men and The Simpsons that you could beat in one sitting or standing,
I guess
and then just be done with it. And there's, you don't really see a lot of that. There's a lot of games that are like 10 hours long or 6 hours long or 15 hours long, or like a single player game in a Call of Duty game will be like 3 hours
long.
But this is like 45 minutes start to finish, which is like really cool because it's the perfect thing. Like, you're like, I need a game to play for the next hour.
Yeah,
exactly. Or like you said, a Saturday afternoon, like that's exactly what I want.
It was great because I played this game because I wanted to add a tally mark to my games list this year. Like, okay, I beat Resogun.
Next Machina.
I beat Next Machina. Like, I played through it top to bottom, even if it's in rookie mode, because I think you and I, we've all kind of talked about how we'll go back and play a game on easy mode just to play through it and experience it and kind of get a feel for it. But as soon as I finished my first run through on rookie, I went back and fired it up on the next difficulty, and I have all intentions to go back through and try to get, you know. But then I talked to people like Mark Medina or Mitchell Saltzman, that's what they do all day every day is play video games, and they're way better at them than I am. And they're telling me that like the expert level difficulties are so hard that they can't get past the third world.
Sure. Oh man,
maybe I'm cool with hard mode. Maybe I'll just strive for that instead. So.
Yeah, I had this downloaded all weekend, and I could not pull myself away from Persona. Still, it was like there. It was just in the corner. Every time I would turn it on, I'd be like, I should probably play an hour of this for work. But I was like,
you're getting close. You only have close. You have like a palace and a half left in Persona.
Yeah,
you're probably 10 hours away.
I'm like, I think I'm 75 hours in.
I've been meaning to jump on that ever since I came back from Japan. I've been like, and then we did E3. I had a moment where I was like, oh yeah, that's right, I went to Japan, and I started getting really like nostalgic for it.
I feel like even just starting the game and walk through Shibuya and stuff, it would
be cool.
You stayed in Shibuya while we were there. Right?
I sunk about 15 to 20 hours into it, and it's one of those games that I keep meaning to go back to, but then there's these other things that just keep popping up. Like,
you gotta just take the plunge.
What's that?
You gotta just take the plunge.
I know, and it's I'm legitimately starting to feel guilty that I haven't gone back and finished it, because like Persona 3 and 4 I love, and I really liked what I played at 5. It's just more and more games keep getting added to the queue, and as I'm knocking out like shorter games, the ones that are taking like 80 and 100 hours to complete is like, I'll get back to that eventually.
This is the quiet, because like next month's July, and then August already starts and fall games coming out.
Yeah. Yep.
July and August are all you've left, and then September's.
And then 2018, first quarter is completely packed. So just do what you can right now because you're screwed for the next
As of right now, this is the only confirmed game where you could kiss your teacher.
Ooh.
I don't think you're going to be able to do that in God of War.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. You can.
Your father's technically your teacher. You give him a peck on the cheek. Thank you for being a cool dad.
Thanks for being a cool dad, God of War.
let's talk about some of the stuff we missed at E3.
Yeah, you want to do that?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so.
Do quickies? Or how are we doing them?
I mean, quickies, we just hop around. We don't have to talk about all these, but yeah, we talked about a bunch of games last week, like God of War and Detroit and Spider-Man. Yep. And there's still a handful of other games we haven't touched on that I think we all either really loved or found something interested in. So. I don't know. Let's start. I want to talk a little bit about the Frozen Wilds, which is the Horizon DLC.
Yeah.
Brian, I know you just absolutely destroyed Horizon when it came out.
Yeah, I think I put like 55, 60 hours into
it. I feel like you beat it in like a weekend.
Well, it's funny because, you played it over the course of a 3-day weekend, and we all got advanced copies, and we were all playing Horizon at the same time, like texting each other, and Brian was like, oh yeah, I beat that. Oh yeah, I beat that. Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm this far in. Oh yeah, I beat the game. Yeah. It's like, how, dude?
I think it was just one of those weekends I got lucky. My wife was like, you need this. And then it was raining or something. It was just like the world worked together. to help me stay inside and do nothing but play.
And we got it like a week early, so you were like, I want to give this game the time of day, especially before Zelda comes out.
And Sony was very smart to get that game out when they did. Mm-hmm. I think when we look at the end of the year, that'll be the one we're talking about in terms of PlayStation exclusives.
Well,
I think that's the one to beat this year.
Well, especially
makes me all the more excited to get a chance to dive back into that world.
Yeah, like, you have to imagine there's going to be like this game of the year version.
Yeah,
or whatever.
We got like X amount of copies for The Office, and when we're done with those Office copies, we're supposed to bring them back and turn them into our library so other people that didn't get a chance to play them can do so. And so, like, I gave my copy of Horizon up a week after I finished it.
Right.
And so it's, like, it's a really exciting thing for me to, like, go back. I haven't played it since I finished it and moved on to Zelda.
Yeah.
So it'll be really exciting for me to go back and play this DLC, which looks awesome.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, have they explained, like, geographically how this works? Is it a brand new area? Is it like a frozen reskin of a previously hot area?
That's a good question. I don't
know.
Like, it's also like, when is it set is the thing I'm confused about.
I mean, without getting into any story details, it could be there's a lot of room there to wiggle around. I can't finish that sentence without spoiling some stuff.
Yeah.
Which I don't want to do.
1937.
Yeah. Great year for that.
1705.
Great year.
So that's, I mean, obviously a lot of those big first party games are 2018, but this is one of the big things along with Uncharted Lost Legacy that are like the big first party Sony fall things.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's golf.
Everybody's golf.
Yeah.
Knack
now
two.
With fishing.
Knack 2. GT Sport.
GT Sport.
Yeah.
Do you think that's actually coming out this year?
No. I think golf and Knack will.
I mean, everybody's golf is definitely coming this year. Yeah.
Oh, everybody's golf is so good.
It's amazing. They had such a strong first half of the year. You know?
Seriously.
Like the first half of the year was so strong that the second half they can kind of be like, yeah, golf and Knack. Go to bed.
No, that's what I think is interesting is like, yes, they have golf and Knack.
Stop
which are
golf and Knack.
Golf and Knack.
That sounds like a demon you're trying
sounds
to.
Sounds like someone just really badly
it's a, it sounds like a Bloodborne boss.
That's my favorite stand-up comedian. but no, I think that everybody's golf and Knack serve two very distinct audiences, and then you've got these sort of standalone expansions for Horizon and Uncharted that are kind of the flagship, like tentpole pieces for Sony's fall, which is really smart.
But then it's like
that's good.
The more important thing, and what they've been doing a really good job of the last couple of years is Battlefront, and like that's the
securing
right? like
third party exclusive stuff.
Exactly, like essentially that's their fall, and like I think a lot of people write that off, but like. You don't need, like, we don't need The Last of Us 2, Death Stranding, and Uncharted to all come out in the same fall.
That's such an interesting point because Sony could be really smart and position all their biggest stuff in winter and spring moving forward and then let all that fall stuff carry them through.
I mean, those tend to be their windows. Like, I mean, like, say what you will about delaying games, but I think, like, February was a really smart launch for Horizon. And then they have that really smart May window when, like, Last of Us came out.
Well, they did Uncharted in May as well.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like they're really good about, honestly, like, putting those things, like, when they say early 2018 for God of War, like, that May window is kind of what I picture, where, like, get it out in the first half of the year when it's a little quieter, and then, you know, if Spider-Man's in the fall, great.
Well, I feel like, I always say this, but it's like Sony's throwing a party, and they're like, there'll be booze and chips and salsa, but everybody bring a dish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
Like, they're like, we're not cooking a lot, but, like, this is a potluck situation here.
Well, it also opens them up to do stuff like this, where it's like, okay, so on, let's say God of War comes out in April or May,
right?
Then they can double dip in November and be like, also, here's a 6-hour God of War expansion.
And it also, like, after the exclusive Destiny content, Call of Duty and Battlefront, then Q1 starts and you get a bunch of exclusive Red Dead. Like, I mean, it's like,
and Far Cry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I think they're really those deals seem a little random, and I think everybody, like, hears PlayStation exclusive content and doesn't really think about it, but, like, that adds up. And I think that's a good, compelling reason to buy a PS4 this fall.
I still do think, and I predicted this for E3 and was completely wrong because I didn't mention anything about it, but I do think that by the end of the year, they're going to mention a price drop across all of their platforms.
You think so?
I see that happening.
You think the PS4 Pro drops, what, $350?
Yeah, I think it'll go down $50 bucks, I mean, maybe with a back end.
Especially before the One X comes out, because I feel like that they want to create even a bigger gulf between what the price of
everybody's gulf.
I was gonna say the same joke.
Everybody's
gulf.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really see them shaking their boots over the X1 X, but we'll see what happens. You know,
shaking their boots on the ground.
Why does everyone invite me to the show?
I don't know.
You have squatters rights, so you've been here long enough.
You're charming, and we love you.
That's true too.
Don't stop putting your fucking hand.
Let's all do a handshake.
great job. Can we talk about Beyond Good and Evil? Because you saw that BCD thing that they released online.
Hands are so sweaty.
Yours are great, by the way. We got paired off really well today. You guys. When you see a game or hear about a game for the first time at E3, it's always like, this is happening for sure. We don't know when. This is happening for sure. We do know when. This is a logo.
Yeah.
And this is a dream.
Yeah.
And I think that's what this was. Beyond Good and Evil 2, I mean, it's rare to see something this early that doesn't even really exist. Like, yeah. This was basically just somebody being like, I have an idea.
So it's this funny thing. I've been reading, shout out to a friend of the show, Jason Schreier, has a book coming out called Blood, Sweat, and Pixels. And I won't say too much about it, but there's a brief part of it where he
comes
talks
out
about
fall.
Comes out this fall. He talks about that period that I think was E3 2012, where we saw Watch Dogs and Star Wars 1313.
Yeah.
And PS4 and Xbox One hadn't been announced yet, but it was very obvious those were next-gen games. And they couldn't say it, but it was like, I don't think anyone really thought the definitive versions of those would be on 360 and PS3, mm-hmm. even if they did like that weird cross-gen version thing. For me, you've said it a bunch with Death Stranding and now Beyond Good and Evil 2. Like, this is beginning to feel like, exactly, like these games probably aren't coming to like 2020. Yeah, exactly.
Well, we got that quote from, I'm forgetting his name, but the guy making the two brother breakout.
Joseph Ferris.
Yeah.
How he was basically, he said that basically the PS4 is like working on a 5-year-old PC at this point. And like,
crazy.
It's crazy, right? Because there was a time when this is the hottest thing in the world. And you stop to think and you're like, oh, yeah, if you're a dev, like, this is a pretty old thing. Yeah. I mean, this wasn't even a next gen PC when it launched.
Yeah. Right.
And then you're seeing these iterative steps with PS4 and X1X. But Sean Layden said, like, there will be a PlayStation 5. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just going to be like the sort of iPhone business model where we'll get a new one every year or so. So I'm interested to see where that goes, but I think for Beyond Good and Evil, like, I don't think that'll work on the base PS4.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like,
I mean, it is, watching that tech demo, it is extremely ambitious.
Yeah.
Like, watching his full tech demo that was released, what, like a week after E3?
Yeah.
That's the BCD that you saw, right?
Yeah. But, like, the thing I saw was also a little more, they showed me that footage, but they also had this, like, giant wall of concept art, and there was, like, 100 pieces, and they're like, we want to focus on three of them. And one was a pig man eating a bowl of noodles in, like, a rundown noodle shop. And then one was the shot of the city with the giant sort of Ganesh statue. And that's the thing that's in the tech demo. And then there's another shot of space and a bunch of spaceships. And the whole thing was, he said, we want you to be able to go from a noodle shop, leave the city, fly into space, go to another planet, land on that planet, and go to another noodle shop. Just seamlessly. We want you to be able to do that seamlessly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, this reminds me a lot of No Man's Sky, except that it seems like they're not relying on, like, they don't want to populate the world by math. They want to populate the world by hand, which to me is almost scarier.
Well, especially when you're considering that they're talking about all the randomly generated content that's happening in the game.
Right.
Like, they're, you know, like all the crew members that you recruit.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And stuff of like, there is a slave ship and you can free the slaves and one of them become a party member that you have hanging out, you know, in your ship, or you can just blow up the ship. That character is never going to exist in your game because you just blew them up. And so, like, they were talking about this sort of dynamic storytelling and the fact that every day after we play the game, you're going to come together and be like, oh, this happened to me. You're like, oh, this never happened to me because of what I did earlier. And again, everything on paper sounds incredible, but it just seems like such a departure from what Beyond Good and Evil 1 was. Like, not in a bad way, but just in a... Oh, like, incredibly impossibly ambitious way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if Beyond Good and Evil 1 is inspired by Zelda, that this is more inspired by, like,
Breath of the Wild.
I mean, kind of. Like, yeah. I mean, it's funny because, I don't know, I look back at, if we are starting to think about, like, this generation sunsetting, like, when I think about, like, Breath of the Wild and Witcher and some of that stuff, like, those, if you were a PS2 gamer and heard them describing The Witcher, you'd be like, well, that's impossible. Like, there's no way that's going to work. And so, like, I don't think... whether it's just the swan song of this gen or like more of a like ambitious next gen thing, like I feel like they're on the right track to what I want games to become, you know, but I just don't know if they can do it. Like, I'm jaded and cynical to the point where like when I see something like this, I've trained myself to not get too excited because I'm deliver on it.
I still want people like Michel Ancel and Kojima and Sean Murray to keep striving to hit there.
Yeah.
And like, even I would so gladly take a No Man's Sky than something that's sort of just safe and boring.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that like the promise of next gen always has to mean something.
Sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. And this time around for this gen, I think that's been kind of hard to quantify.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't really know what this gen stood for, because it hasn't been a like universal lack of loading screens.
Yeah.
We've still seen those. There have still been games with, you know, really bad loading screens. It hasn't been, you know, 60 frames per second, 1080p or whatever, the 4K across the board.
Yeah.
That hasn't, there's no standards with any of that stuff. So it's not like the 16-bit, 32-bit, 64-bit, you know, where you could sort of quantify all that.
Yeah.
This one has been like more better of the stuff you used to have.
Yeah.
So I think getting to a point like, getting to a point where we say, like, we're going to get rid of loading times entirely, or we're going to have seamless open worlds. Because we mentioned Breath of the Wild, but even that, you can walk from end to end of that map and see dynamic things happening in everyone's game, and it's all different. But the second you walk into a shrine, there's a loading screen. And you walk out, there's another one.
Yeah.
So that's where it gets tricky, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I guess looking back on this gen, I don't know what is the one game that I'm going to be like, that was the game that, and like, the defining game of that generation. Because I feel like we had Mario 64, GTA 3, I'd argue last generation that Assassin's Creed is almost the game that many games have sort of taken from what
and
it did.
I think it sort of like redefined what an open world game was. I think it redefined like how people thought about combat in a 3D game.
Yeah. I actually think that when I look back on the PS3 era, and this is kind of controversial, but I think it's Journey.
Yeah.
Like in terms of...
I mean, Journey's my favorite game, definitely.
Well, but I think like on an artistic level, on the fact that it was an indie game, that it was 2.5 hours mm-hmm. long, and that it's visually striking and different than anything else we'd seen. I think that like we've seen a lot of open world games. We've seen a lot of like since, you know, how many decades now have we had like 3D open world games? It's been a long time. Yeah.
But I feel like the fact that no one at this table disagreed with you for even a second when you said Mario 64, GTA 3, and then had a bunch of different answers for last gen,
it's weird.
The answer. I feel like last gen, it had Arkham for combat, it had Assassins for open world stuff, it did have Journey for kind of the idea of multiplayer being something more than just traditional
Uncharted
multiplayer.
Well,
also the idea of also the idea of a tiny development team putting out something that can impact the gaming community as a whole, at large.
Like indies and XBLA and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like I think
it's that game and Braid that put the idea of an indie game on the map.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's weird because I totally agree with you. I think last gen, I think there was some stuff that happened in the 360 PS3 era that was big leaps forward. I think this era feels like just modifying and iterating on that. And
I don't know if like Destiny is the thing.
Maybe, I think Destiny's probably
Destiny's probably close. I mean, to me, it's probably Breath of the Wild. You know, I think in the way that people talk about Mario 64 and the way that people talk about GTA 3, I think in 5 or 10 years, people are going to look at the open world, like the open world experience that you have in Breath of the Wild and how completely different it is from
It fulfilled the promise.
Like,
I mean, it's what we were just talking about, where I can't even count, like I've been in this industry not that long, but like since 2011 when I was actively like taking appointments and stuff, and I can't even count the number of times during a press conference or in a demo when they said, you see that in the distance, you can go to that, and it was kind of BS. Like technically you could, but you had to like go through a bunch of loading screens, and then like you were in like a pre-cut version of that. Like I feel like Breath of the Wild has finally fulfilled that, like, hey, literally anything is
I think
scalable.
So yeah, Horizon came close for me this year.
See, Horizon's been hard to go back to, and Horizon's incredible and prettier than Breath of the Wild in a lot of ways.
Well, on a technical level, I think like Horizon is unmatched this generation. Mm-hmm. I think that like what I mean, pull up screenshots of that game in photo mode, and it's like it's
insane.
It's unreal, you know.
So I don't know, like that was a very long way of saying that like I do wonder when we get that, like the Super Nintendo to N64 leap, no one would argue was like unbelievably dramatic. Like I hope we get a leap like that.
Yeah.
But to your point about Breath of the Wild and a tech demo that says like, hey, see this point in the horizon, you can go there. I feel like watching Michelle Ancel's tech demo in a world post Breath of the Wild is like, oh, this is something that's maybe plausible.
Yeah. Sure.
A grander, like, more technologically advanced level, because that game looks insane.
Yeah. And how good would that feel if, like, of everyone, he's the guy who finally delivered
it? Oh, totally. Yeah, like, seriously. And he has the backing of Ubisoft behind him, which is sort of unlimited resources.
And unlimited resources and the best, like, I think Ubisoft, more than literally any other company, does such a good job embracing new hardware.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're always there at launch, for better or worse. Mm-hmm. And I respect that.
Yeah.
Before we move on to the next topic, I just wanted to talk a little bit about...
Tomatoes? What's up? Are they in season? Are they out of season?
No, I just wanted to touch a little bit on Ubisoft's press conference this year, compared to most other developers' press conferences this year. I feel like they had the most human conference. And like Michel Ancel coming out and announcing this game at the end and like tearing up on stage, or that.
Or the Rabbids guy.
Ubisoft the man.
Don't cry, Ubisoft man.
I thought it was really interesting that in an age where essentially Microsoft, PlayStation, Nintendo, Bethesda. They all came out and they were like, and here are our games, roll the tape. Ubisoft created an event. And like in a year that it was a fan-driven event, or not a fan-driven event, but the first year that it was public for fans, Ubisoft created a press conference that was like for us and for the general public.
And for the devs. Like that's the thing. Like I loved Aisha Tyler, but dropping Aisha Tyler and letting devs talk made such a difference. And I think the best part of EA's conference was when everybody shut up and Joseph Fares came out and was so excited about his game in the same way the guy who did Unravel was excited a few years ago. Like when you put a passionate person on stage, it's authentic and that plays a lot better than a hired host who is great and funny and whatever, but like it's a different kind of energy.
I agree. Also, it's harder to make fun of.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you get a lot of snark during the press conferences. I noticed Sony during E3 was tweeting out like pictures, just big face pictures of the developers working on stuff.
Yeah, I thought that was
and
really
I was
cool.
Like, that's really awesome.
Yeah. Which is funny because in the infancy of video games in general, when the Ataris and the Nintendos of the world were out like marketing their games, they originally wanted to put developers out in front of the public and say, like, hey, here's the people that are making these experiences that you love. But nobody cared.
Yeah.
Nobody cared about who was behind those games. And now I feel like it's sort of come full circle where you can have a conversation about the people that are creating these games and say, like, I remember that guy got on stage and pitched his game in a way that made me care about it.
Right. I mean, there was an era there where you only knew the names of like 7 or 8 developers. It was like Miyamoto, Will Wright, and a couple other people. You saw like Sid Meier and stuff like that. That kind of trickled away. And then we got the PlayStation era where you got like guys like David Jaffe. And you're like, this is why am I hearing about this guy? Oh, because he's outspoken and his games are sort of abrasive. Same thing, right?
But I mean,
and then now you have like your Jonathan Blows and stuff like that. So not necessarily household names.
I think Sony's done a really good job at that of like when we see games behind closed doors at E3, a lot of times it's Corey Barlog showing God of War,
Ryan Intihart
showing Spider-Man, David Cage showing.
I mean, and that's the funny thing is I think for the hardcore, that's getting better and better. I remember like not even that long ago, they asked like people who had 1,000 hours in Call of Duty who makes the game. And no one knew. Like, no one even knew Activision, let alone Infinity Ward and Treyarch and stuff. Yeah. And, like, I would be curious to see if any of that has changed. Because I feel like now there's just so much more visibility on that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, like, I mean, they're on the second Star Wars game, right? With Battlefront in the title, besides the second of the reboot, right? And we already know the people writing it. It helps one of them is our friend.
Yeah.
But the fact that we're like,
who made Battlefront 2? Mitch Dyer.
But, like, I couldn't tell you who wrote the last 5 Call of Duty games, and I'm sure they're competent and, you know, at times excellent writers.
Don't worry,
but
it was, they hired a bunch of big names that, like,
Didn't the guy who wrote Traffic write one of them?
Yeah. Well, and also, what's his name from
Stephen Hagen wrote one?
Yep. And then, what's his name from Crash?
Brendan Fraser?
Yeah, Brendan Fraser wrote one of them.
Ludacris, Chris Bridges.
Uh-huh.
Other games coming out this fall include Bethesda titles like The Evil Within 2 and Wolfenstein 2.
Very excited for these.
Dude, I am so stoked for Wolfenstein 2.
That Wolfenstein 2 a demo trailer
showcase.
Short film was completely bonkers.
Yeah.
Like, I really loved the way that they did this whole like retro like short film leading into the actual game itself.
Yeah. I mean, that was the only part of Bethesda's conference that worked for me.
I missed Wolfenstein New Order when it came out, and PSN had this huge E3 sale where Wolfenstein was $10 and I picked it up, and that game is awesome.
Yeah, the game is
so good. I'm completely sold on the second one. Yeah.
Same. You should play the DLC too.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
It's got zombies. Nazi zombies. And then I really like the first Evil Within.
Me too.
I just also like big, slick survival horror games. So.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with Shinji Mikami.
Yeah, and I thought this trailer was a little like...
So,
They haven't said that he's actually...
He's executively producing it. He's an executive producer on the game.
Ooh.
So when Pete Hines was on our showcase for Evil Within 2, I believe his quote was, Shinji's hands are all over this game.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So just getting right in. Just making the hamburgers.
That sounds disgusting, but that's exactly what I want. I want this to be disgusting.
You ever get in there and make the hamburgers?
I mean, if there was a level in the new game where you had to get in there and make the hamburgers, that would be totally on brand for this franchise. Just get right in there and make those hamburgers.
I don't like this at all.
Yeah, the last game was disgusting, and I loved it for that. You know?
Just like so, like for lack of a better term, visceral.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
When I first came back to IGN, I came back like mid-May, and then we went to E3 right after, and you and I were walking around the floor, and they had an Evil Within booth. At the front of Bethesda's booth, there was Evil Within, and it was just like a little section, but like the welcome desk is like right in the middle, and maybe 3 feet from it, there's like this brain.
It was a screaming brain covered in barbed wire, and they put it in this like dark little like corner area with this red and black strobe light over it, red and white, and it was just like da 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 da, and you just heard screaming and like thunder and yelling
pause.
And we walked up to get an appointment to check out Bethesda stuff, and there was this lady standing at the booth, and it was just like and we're like, hey, we're here for our 2:30. And she's like, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I'm going crazy from that screaming chainsaw brain that has been next to me for 4 days now. And we're like, oh, I'm really sorry. Well, there's a similar story happened. I don't know if we ever told this on the show, but when WayForward made that DuckTales reboot.
Yeah.
Where
Greg Savin
was showing off Transistor. And like, he just had to listen to the DuckTales theme.
I was like, how's your E3 going? He's like, I've been listening to this for 4 days. And my game has music too.
Really though, E3 is a magical, indescribable place, and you should definitely go someday.
It's like when Gearbox licensed the first like 40 seconds to that Alt-J song for Battleborn.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was in our booth, I heard that a lot. Yeah.
It was all worth it though.
That's amazing. Some other games that were huge, like
full disclosure, I used to work for Gearbox.
Yeah, okay. We know that.
Did you know Justin's a dad?
One of the other big games, which sort of came out of left field, but then did killer numbers for us, was Dragon Ball FighterZ with a Z.
FighterZ.
Which it's one of those things where it's like, it doesn't matter if you like Dragon Ball or if you like fighting games. Seeing this game in motion is like one of the most incredible things ever.
It just looks like you're watching the cartoon. Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah.
In the same way that South Park did that, where it was like, oh, like this feels perfect. Like this is that. This feels so authentic.
Right. Which is like kind of amazing because it's such a... despite the fact that it's like almost 20 years before South Park, it's such an incredible technical feat to be like, we made that cartoon look like that cartoon. There were that quote we heard thrown around during the PS3 era of, I forget it was Microsoft or Sony, but they're like, oh, you'll believe when you see Toy Story graphics.
Yeah.
It's like, we never actually got those.
Yeah. You know?
In some ways we did, because the original Toy Story doesn't look as great as you remember it looking.
Yep.
But this game looks like a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah.
Like they nailed the aesthetic.
Yeah, and it has the pedigree behind it of it's the BlazBlue and the Persona. Mm-hmm.
Guilty Gear.
And the Persona team, right? Mm-hmm. Persona 4?
The first one?
Yeah, not Persona 4 the game, the Persona Fight.
Persona of Arena. Fighting All Night.
Fighting All Night.
I think Ultimax is an internal team. I'm not sure about Arena.
Yeah. It looks cool. And it also, like, it seems like it almost took some of the wind out of Marvel vs. Capcom sales. Because I think even like hardcore fighting fans were like, oh, man, this is the thing.
I saw a lot of people talking about how FighterZ definitely trumped Marvel vs. Capcom in terms of like best fighting game at E3.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, Absolver and this and like there's so many games doing something really interesting that I don't know that Marvel is doing yet.
That's the question that I have, though, is, I mean... Yeah, the game looks amazing. It looks just like Dragon Ball Z. What interesting things is it doing behind the scenes? Like, mechanically, I'm not a fighting game guy. I couldn't look at it and be like, whoa, that's crazy what they're doing.
And so we brought in Destin Laguerre. No, he's not here.
No,
backstage.
Max did an interview with the team behind Dragon Ball FighterZ at E3 that if you're interested in this game, you should look up, because Max is a huge Dragon Ball fan and had a ton of great questions about it. If he was here, I'm sure he would just go nuts on this.
How'd you get the Piccolo so green?
Yeah.
That was my question.
I think in terms of not being a legal minefield like the Marvel vs. Capcom situation is, it's pretty nice. Like, they're not like, oh, Trunks is a Netflix TV show exclusive, or like Fox owns Piccolo.
Well, that was Brian L. Toddle's Dragon Ball Z. Knowledge.
There we go.
And then the last game from E3 I want to talk about was just the short little snippet we got of Shadow of the Colossus remake.
So this was probably the biggest surprise of
the Sony conference.
They renewed the copyright, or they renewed
that happens like all the time.
No, but that was the thing.
But they did it like the day before, right?
It was day. It was that morning.
Doing your homework on the bus.
Literally that morning, they did trademarks for The Inpatient and this.
A lot of the Playlink
stuff.
And
Monster Hunter World and something else, and a lot of the Playlink stuff. And it was crazy because all of those came true. Like, that was, this year was not very leaky for E3 compared to previous years.
Except for those rabbits.
Assassin's Creed.
Everything
for everyone but Ubisoft. But no, like, it was crazy because I think, like, I totally, even seeing them do the Shadow of the Colossus trademark, even when everything else had already proven to be true, I still didn't expect a remake like this.
Yeah, no.
Maybe at most, I think I would have expected them to do like a take the HD remaster of the Eco games, of Eco and Shadow, and put them with Last Guardian on a PS4 or something as like a collection.
I'm really interested in this one. I mean, I think you're one of the biggest fans of that game here.
Yeah,
right?
it's a perfect game.
Yeah. It's a perfect game minus camera and stuff like that.
It's a perfect game in spite of itself.
Yes,
right?
exactly. And so it's not perfect. But yeah, the point is it's a perfect concept.
And my sort of like, I mean, to go just like to vomit out everything I'm thinking about this game is that I'm
get in there and make the hamburgers.
Just really make the hamburgers with the puke.
You look like you're making the hamburger.
Yeah, I'm making the hamburger right. They're just I'm making little patties. What are you doing with your hands today? You're very handy. Shake my hand again. Okay.
Still sweaty.
Good deal, guys. Good work. So I played The Last Guardian. I finished it, and I liked a lot of it. Again, in spite of itself, I think a lot of the technical stuff held that game back. I'm still not convinced that the team behind that game is able to make what we perceive to be a modern 3D.
Well, that's
don't worry, because
does the team behind that game exist anymore?
Yeah, like, and that's the thing. That's a,
well, then who? Yeah, well, then
that's
who's?
That's the smart thing about handing it off to a company like Bluepoint, right? Mm. Because Bluepoint has done a bunch of these HD remakes and remasters, and like Bluepoint can go in, they can reskin the whole game and make it look beautiful, but they can also go in and say, okay, this is how grip works now.
Yeah.
This is how jumping works now.
This is how the camera works now.
Here's the thing, though. Like, if you change too much of that, like, fundamentally, are you going to anger the fan base around the original?
And if that's the case, the fan base should get over it because those parts of the game are bad.
You're right. I'm totally with you.
We have part of that fan base.
Yeah, that's why it's so frustrating, like, not having gotten Final Fantasy VII Remake yet. Like, we, for these really true ground up remakes, like, we haven't gotten to see if it works yet.
Who's to say that this is that, though? You know, like, it could very well just be a fresh coat of paint, but I think we're
there's no way that looked way too dramatic.
I'm
curious, like, the Japan Studio logo comes up and then the Bluepoint logo, so it's like, I don't know if that's kind of a nod to the original team or if there is still active development happening at Japan Studio. Like, Bluepoint obviously is incredible at textures and at art and at making things look modern, so it's like, maybe Japan Studios reworking mechanics while Bluepoint is working on kind of the aesthetics. Like, we don't really know that breakdown yet.
I mean, I don't want this game to have a camera that resembles anything like the one we had in The Last Guardian.
Same.
And again, like, you can go back and listen. I really liked a lot of that game. Yeah. I'm so glad I played it. I think about it probably once a week. It just pops in my head. There's something like intangibly magical about that game that will stay with me forever. But on a technical level, like, moving that character around was cumbersome. Moving that camera around was cumbersome. I know there's a lot of apologists. There's a lot of people that are like, you're wrong. They just took us, you know, raked us over the coals over that conversation. But the reality is, and that's something I think 90% of the people who played it and people who reviewed it agree with, is that that is kind of a difficult game to actually play. It is almost constantly pushing back on you.
I mean,
and Shadow of the Colossus has the same exact issues.
Yeah. Yep.
So I don't want to see that game drop in 2018 with a fresh coat of paint and then just have the same problems, because we know it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
That's inherent, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, Last Guardian was beautiful.
We have these sort of pie in the sky kind of ideas about it. Like, yes, they will go in and tune up the mechanics and maybe add stuff that was scrapped from the original game or something like that. But I think inherently Shadow of the Colossus is a little easier to rectify that stuff with, because Last Guardian, you have to deal with a giant on-screen partner in these like small spaces. Mm-hmm. I think had there been more open areas in The Last Guardian, that it wouldn't have been as huge an issue, because like there's stuff like the mirror maze in The Last Guardian where you're climbing up all those different mirror spaces. Like, that's amazing. Like, that's one of the best moments in video games from last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's countered by four or five corridors where you have to get that bird dog to follow you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally. You're right. You're totally right.
That's the thing about Shadow, is like the moments in that game, and I haven't played it since PS2. I didn't even play the HD collection, but it's just like the moments in that game are like some of my most like epic memory. Like, pre-God of War, pre-whatever, like, that is what I think of when I think of, like, crazy, gigantic, like, just the moments where I was like, oh, my God, like, I did that.
And it's like, PS2 could do that.
Yeah. If they can capture that but also have it look beautiful and
have it run
better,
at a steady frame rate.
Yeah.
Yeah, have the draw distance not be bugged.
Yeah, can you also imagine just the upgrade in sense of scale?
Yeah. I mean, seriously.
Like, those monsters were huge to begin with. And, like, think of every enemy that you take on in that game as large as the last enemy in that game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, show me that first boss, but on a scale, on a PlayStation 4 scale, that's like the size of that last encounter.
I love that, though. Again, though, that's like you're getting into like George Lucas special edition territory where you're like fundamentally changing.
Yeah, but if you're not venturing into that territory in this game, then like why bother? Because we've already got it on PlayStation 2.
Right.
We've got the HD remake on PlayStation 3. Yep. You can stream it from
PS Now. On PS right. Now. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I mean, it's like if you want that experience, it's readily available for you.
This is a good
point. Yeah. This is sort either. Of a it is a special edition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not going to be like Star Wars where it's like actively difficult to get the original.
Oh, where it replaces the original. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I could see that then. I'm with you then. Then bring on the changes. Like, I'm like Goldfarb. I'm like the rest of you. I can't look at a screenshot of that game without getting just crazy nostalgia.
Well, yeah. Look at the reaction in our war room.
Yeah, it was insane.
People were bugging out. Like that it was nuts. Like the music started up and people were like, "No way!"
Yep. Yeah.
And then when we saw the opening shots, it was like, "Holy cow! I can't believe this is a real thing."
I think that and the Cuphead release date were like the biggest explosions.
Yeah.
It's weird because what I would love to see them do. I really like the Master Chief Collection thing of like switching back and forth. Totally wouldn't work in this case, obviously, but I would love if they, like, I don't know, throw in, like, the PS2 on PS4,
original version.
Play the original version with trophies or whatever. Yeah. Like, I think that would be a really cool, like, pre-order bonus or something like that.
So, Tony Shade from the Podcast Beyond group asks, is the Shadow of the Colossus remaster / remake worth a $60 price tag?
I think so.
I think, strictly for the reasons that we outlined above, absolutely. I'd gladly pay $60 for it again to experience it in an upgraded, like, completely different way.
Yeah.
So if it's the same camera and the same everything and they just put a fresh coat of paint on it, no.
No.
Yeah. If it's a ground-up remake and it looks like it is, then yeah.
So, I mean, as of right now, yes. Like, obviously, I will wait and see closer release
even,
to what
even if it was just a fresh coat of paint, I'd probably still pay $20 for it.
I mean, it's tough to say, right? Because, I mean, I look at stuff like Lego City Undercover got re-released for $60 and they barely did a thing for that. You know, like there,
but then there's like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. I totally don't mind paying full price for it because it adds so much.
Right. Yeah, it's tough, right? A game is worth what you'll pay for it. So, but I think you'll see people actively push back against something like the Modern Warfare remaster, which got priced for $40, and there was a lot of feedback about that.
Yeah.
People were not happy about that. They're also selling DLC on top of it, so it's kind of sketchy. But
yeah, money's always a worth thing.
Yeah.
So that was everything that was at E3. Really quick, I want to just go through a list of notable games that weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
Death Stranding, which we knew wasn't going to be there.
Right.
Yeah, there was a merchandise booth there, which is weird.
Yeah, and like Kojima was there. Talk with the Kong director.
Yep, and Low Roar played, and there was a Luton statue. It was basically everything but the game was there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which, yeah, again.
Honestly, finally.
Yeah.
Great.
I agree.
Take some time of development. Yeah. Red Dead 2 wasn't there, which after the delay in May, I don't think that was a huge surprise.
I even wonder, I'm so used to Rockstar skipping E3. Like, some part of me, even if it was still on track for fall, wouldn't have been that surprised if they skipped it and done an event in early August.
It's totally going to be a thing. We're going to come into work someday and they're going to be like, hey, tomorrow we're streaming gameplay. And it's
Rockstar's, Rockstar's one of the few developers that doesn't need E3, need that audience to sell their games. So.
We'll get like three screenshots of like a hawk and a gun this fall and you'll love it.
A hawk gun? Sign me up.
To shoot other hawks? Because that's weird.
No, it shoots hawks out.
Oh!
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was what the game Hawken was about.
I'm into that.
Yeah, and Tony Hawk.
Yeah, Tony.
And that other game, Hawks, with an X.
Yeah.
No, I was like, you guys haven't played any of those games.
We did. Also, we talked last week, Last of Us Part 2, obviously sort of notably missing. I think part of that is just they want to focus on Lost Legacy.
I really like that that quote about that, about how like they just wanted to focus on the Uncharted characters.
Yeah.
I'm like, then you'll see Joel and Ellie some, you know.
The quote that Marty just said?
That'll be PSX. Yeah, he quoted a great mind.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised that they didn't focus PSX on Lost Legacy and then reveal The Last of Us 2
at
E3 as their and one more thing.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised.
I think it's still too early. Like, I think this was when you needed to focus on Uncharted because, like you were saying earlier, like, that's their fall. Like, and I mean, like, they do have Knack, they do have Golf, they do have maybe GT and everything else and all the third-party stuff, but, like, Uncharted's their big bet for fall.
Yeah, and I, in our audience, in the comments leading up to E3, it was The Last of Us, Last of Us, Last of Us.
Right.
People wanted to see that game, and I think that they were kind of surprised that it wasn't there.
I think they're trying to position PSX as a bigger and bigger thing. I think that's when we're going to get gameplay footage.
Yeah,
because then Uncharted's out.
I think this PSX is going to be the biggest one. So
yeah, and I still think we won't get a release date for Last of Us 2.
No, I don't think so. I think it's a, I think it's a 2019 game.
I was going to say maybe a window.
I think it's 2019.
Yeah, I agree.
Wild wasn't there, which was the Michel Ancel.
Right. He clearly had his hands busy with something else. He was making hamburgers elsewhere.
Yeah, he's making those French burgers. Yeah.
It's really funny that it's like he's off making this like ambitious pitch for a semi-sequel prequel to a game, and it's like, hey, dude, what about that other thing you're working on? Right. Like, you got this whole other ambitious world you're working on.
Also, hey, whatever happened with old Snake Tits over there?
I forgot about that game.
I'm weirded out by, like, so that Wild was a separate studio that he started, but, like, I'm curious what Ubisoft Montpellier is doing other than Beyond Good and Evil. Like, is there another Rayman game? Are there any more UbiArt games?
What's
like,
more Rayman games?
Yeah, I hope there's another Rayman game.
Yeah. Well, it's a Ubisoft game, so you'll find out sooner than later before they're ready to tell you. some dude will snitch
on
a train.
It'll be on YoGaf tomorrow.
Yeah.
You haven't got to that chapter of Schreier's book yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Cyberpunk 2077. Again, like we mentioned, Death Stranding and Beyond Good and Evil. I think this is a next gen game.
Did we talk about the leak stuff before?
That was really cool.
About they
handled that.
Hackers tried to ransom them out of.
Yeah.
I loved the stance that they took on that. Yeah. Yep. Like, good for those guys for being like, yeah, okay, go ahead and leak it. Like, that stuff's old and we don't care about it.
Yeah. So. Yep. What's the quick rundown on that, Goldie?
Basically, someone. I don't know if they hacked it or stole something physically, but they basically found a bunch of like old assets in that game and were trying to ransom them. And CD Projekt was like, whatever, and rather than negotiate with terrorists, they put out a statement that was like, hey, we're being held, ransom for, or our files are being held ransom. We're not going to pay it. This guy might leak them. If you see that, it's not reflective of the game. Like, thank you for waiting for what we actually released.
Well, and more importantly, they said, if you want to know anything about Cyberpunk, it's going to come from us. Like, don't listen to these guys over here.
Yeah.
Which I think is such a, like, I would have loved to have seen that dude's or lady dude's face when they read that statement that was like, well, okay, this totally blew up.
It's cool because, sorry, I'm going to plug Schreier's book again, but the CD Projekt chapter and kind of where they come from and what they stand for makes that make more sense to me.
Yeah.
They're a really fascinating studio.
Yeah. Deep Down, which I think it's safe to assume doesn't exist anymore.
It can't exist. Yeah, that's, well, I mean,
it was the Capcom.
I was about to say it was revealed too long ago to still be a game, but then Dreams was revealed at literally the same event. So, I don't know. But, yeah, for anyone who doesn't remember, Deep Down was revealed alongside the PlayStation 4 in February 2013.
This is that Capcom dungeon crawler, right?
Yeah. Dungeon crawler. Sort of that
Dark Souls.
Yeah. Incredibly.
It went totally quiet for about a year, and then it was at TGS, and Keza played it, and it became
incomprehensible because I played it in Japanese.
And then after you play it, they were like, by the way, it'll be free to play, and then it just dried up, and we haven't heard anything in, three years?
Yeah.
It had such an incredibly gorgeous, haunting reveal trailer.
Yep.
It's one of those things where when we get it, we'll get it. I keep expecting it'll be a TGS, but this is probably going to go scale bound and just quietly.
I think it's probably been dead for multiple
quite
years.
A while.
Really? Why don't they just straight up say that?
I don't know.
Because Capcom doesn't really do that. Like, I think other companies are more open about that, but Capcom, I think they would rather just let it die.
What was that game, Capcom? Dead Phoenix, part of the Capcom 5?
Capcom also likes to do the same kind of things that Nintendo likes to do, in that they'll keep something in their back pocket, and 5 or 6 years down the line, they'll be like, hey, by the way, that game is gone, but we actually took assets of that or took pieces of that, and now it's this now.
Yeah. Right. I think that's probably what they're waiting for. Yeah.
Deep Down Adventures and Dinosaur Planet.
I think they're waiting for... You guys are going to laugh when I say this. I think they're waiting for the butt. I think they're waiting to be able to say, hey...
Well, who the hell is it?
Yeah. I think there's way to be able to say, hey, Deep Down is dead, but we have this instead.
You guys are going to laugh at me when I say the butt, but I'm just going to say it anyways.
I heard Goldfarb likes to go deep down in the butt.
Oh, God.
Where's their handshake now, you little elf?
Okay. All right.
All right. You also mentioned Dreams there, the Media Molecule game. I really hope we see that. I really hope that isn't.
We talked about it a little bit last week. I don't know. I want them, like, the promise they made was that before they did anything with it, there'd be betas, there'd be content. Like, I don't know. I think we'll see more. We will see trickles before we see it.
Yep. Deep down in the butt trickles. Final Fantasy VII Remake, which, we got a little bit of Kingdom Hearts right beforehand. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
It sounds like there was some Square's bringing this game internal. Sounds like they're like, it'll come up before 2020.
Yeah, exactly. Like, them bringing that game internal extends that timeline.
Honestly, more than anything else, Nomura directing it extends that timeline. Yeah. Does he finish Kingdom Hearts and then start on this?
Is it still episodic?
Is it still three parts? Yeah. I think that when they reveal it, which I'm guessing is TGS, when they reveal whatever's the next thing, they have to give some kind of scope. And like Max was saying, a playable demo or just something, just something to be like, hey, this is real.
Also, here's my theory, is that by the time this comes off, Tabata directs this game. They're going to bring him in and be like, you need to finish this.
Well, the actually, closer, if I remember right, it's actually not Nomura directing. I lied. It's the Mobius guy, right?
Right.
I think he took over.
Right.
Yeah.
There must have been some sort of like internal survey at Square a couple years ago where a bunch of Square fans were like, yes, take your time and show us everything 10 years in advance, and we are perfectly okay with it. Because this doesn't really fly with like a lot of other companies, but with them, I think people are just okay with it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they know to expect it when they get it, and when they do, it'll be incredibly high quality. Yeah. But I think they showed their hand too early with this one, but we'll see how it pans out.
I agree.
Yeah, that's quite a nutshell. Shenmue 3. Obviously shown at that exact same
and they said ahead of time, like, hey, we're not ready to show anything. But yeah, I mean, again, come on, guys. Like, what's going
on? That's a game that's a logo. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who knows what's going on behind
that? That one's a little different because they had to say we're doing this.
Yeah.
Please help us, please fund this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird one. We haven't really seen
little stuff.
Have you ever played either of the first Shenmue games?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, if not, you and I should do a Let's Play.
I would love to do a Let's Play with
you. Hey, Rio.
They're weird, weird games that people completely love.
I love them.
I'm not as crazy about them as some people are. I totally understand why they're so beloved, though, because there's some really wonderful stuff. I mean, just as a guy walking around, like, playing with capsule toy machines is enough for me to be like, that's cool. I'm into that.
I'm looking for some sailors.
The last movie on her, Dead Island 2, we saw that trailer in 2014. Like, that's switched hands a couple times, too.
Label,
like,
that Gamescom.
And that's one of those things where, like, I feel like they missed their window. Like, Dead Island 1 had, like, the greatest reveal trailer ever. And then I think a lot of people liked it, but it wasn't quite what I think was promised. And then they did Riptide, and, like, they kept the brand alive. And, like, 2014 felt like great timing for a sequel. But now it's like, okay, so let's say best case scenario, out of nowhere, they surprise us. It's a Gamescom. It's out this fall. Who wants a Dead Island
sequel?
Beloved.
It's not beloved enough a franchise to warrant that kind of reaction.
Exactly.
Right? It's not like God of War taking 10 years off and then coming back with this huge, like, reimagining. It's like, well, here's a sequel to a game that a lot of people liked.
Yep. Yeah, but that's already been improved upon.
Right.
Yes, but who do you voodoo, bitch? Remember that one?
I think it's such a weird... No. It's a weird
really?
Thought for,
you don't
like,
remember that? Yeah, that was like their whole thing.
It's a weird spot if you're Deep Silver, because I'm sure they've put a lot of money into it, and their other big cash cow is Agents of Mayhem, which is not Saints Row. Like, it's a risk for them in different ways. And, like, they're one of those publishers that, like, is really big, but I semi-forget about. And so I don't know. I'm fascinated to see when they reveal this game, how they make people care.
Yeah. Well, we saw the remaster, whatever it was last year, collection come out with some extra goodies.
Yep.
I don't think that thing moved the needle at all. And
yeah,
I don't think it was definitely not the brand resurgence they probably had hoped for.
Yeah.
What was the, like, free running zombie game from a couple of years?
Dying Light.
Yeah.
So to me, like, that's the one. I think that completely stole that conversation.
Yeah. Yep.
I think if they announced a full on sequel to that game, it would.
Didn't Techland make the first Dead Island also?
It was Polish developed. Yeah.
Full circle.
All the techies.
Dead Island 2, was that the one, the commercial with
the guy
was
running
on the Santa Monica?
That was E3 2014 when they revealed
it. Was that Blur?
That version, I'm sure that was just a Blur CG trailer.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was Blur specifically, but it was a CG trailer. And then that developer left the project, and it moved to a different dev. And it's been, I don't know if it's been completely radio silent, but, like, it's...
Pretty much,
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild. So those are the biggies that weren't at E3. And then, as promised, you want to go over just really quick what this cross-platform nonsense is? Just for people who don't know, this came out a little while ago, but we just didn't get a chance to talk about it.
So at E3, this was a huge thing. Basically, Nintendo announced... Well, first, Microsoft on stage announced that Minecraft is going cross-play, basically, that they're combining all the versions.
There was a Switch in their Minecraft.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There was literally a Switch on
really
stage
bizarre to see.
At E3, which meant that Nintendo was in every single conference in some capacity other than Sony's. But it was weird because so that happened, and Microsoft, Nintendo are buddy-buddy, PC version, Xbox version, Switch version, whatever, and then Sony quietly isn't part of that. And then on Nintendo's show, they announced Rocket League with cross-platform play, and again, Microsoft is in, and then Nintendo's not part of it. And so... Sony's not part of it, thank you. So Jim Ryan did an interview at E3 where he basically said...
Do you want the quote? I got it for you right there. Look at that.
Wow. He said, it's certainly not a profound philosophical stance we have against this. We've done it in the past. We're always open to conversations with any developer or publisher who wants to talk about it. Unfortunately, it's a commercial discussion between ourselves and other stakeholders, and I'm not going to get into the detail of that on this particular instance. And I can see your eyes rolling. We've got to be mindful of our responsibility to our install base. Minecraft, the demographic playing that, you know as well as I do, it's all ages, but it's also very young. We have a contract with the people who go online with us, that we look after them, and that they're within the PlayStation curated universe. Exposing what in many cases are children to external influences we have no ability to manage or look after, it's something we have to think about very carefully.
Yeah, and I find that immensely interesting because it's like the most Nintendo quote we've ever heard.
That was Phil Spencer. Even Phil Spencer responded, and he was like, come on. It seems so weird, especially to say about Nintendo, who exactly is the most family-friendly company of all. So I don't know. The thing that bothers me about this overall is that the person who loses is the consumer.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, from a business perspective, I totally get it. I totally get why Sony would want a closed ecosystem. They're far and away in first place this generation. Why mess with success? Why make it so you can buy a version on Xbox and play with your friends rather than make your friends buy a PS4 version if they want to play with
you? It's also, he's implying that their world is so buttoned up that a kid won't hear the F word playing Minecraft on PS4. And it's no, you totally
especially
will.
In Minecraft, you can just draw a big F word in the sand.
Yeah, exactly.
I think what's weird for me is that it just feels like it's bad will towards players. Because how much money are you really going to lose by just opening up your ecosystem? It feels like, if nothing else, just a good PR.
Especially a game like Minecraft.
Yeah.
And Rocket League.
And Rocket League.
Rocket League, two
huge community-based games. Yeah.
And the PS4 built Rocket League. Having a PlayStation Plus game, that is, it would have been successful anyway, and obviously it's huge on Steam, but I do think that, that helped push it over the edge into mainstream. And so, they already have those people. That player base is there. Just play with the Switch version is going to sell 500,000 copies? It's not going to dig into PlayStation. I don't really get that way of thinking. It feels very archaic to me.
Yeah, it sucks. Like you said, it ultimately hurts the consumer.
Yeah.
It also blows my mind, the technology behind what's making those systems talk to each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I can't even begin to comprehend
when
that.
Nintendo announced that Rocket League was coming and it was cross-platform with everything else except Sony.
Yeah.
How?
Nintendo can't get online to work on their own systems.
Yeah.
Yep.
Without you having to plug into a squid or whatever.
You think of Splatoosh?
No, that's what they're doing for Splatoosh. Yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Find out more on NVC.
Yes, there you go. Awesome. That was a good show.
Yeah.
We did good. Andrew, tell us about a cool thing that's happening this month known as June.
Well, what little's left. Yeah,
E3.
IGN First this month, I think I mentioned it a couple times in the show, but our IGN First this month is all about Japan. And Caleb and I went to Japan, saw a bunch of cool stuff. Luke Riley from our Australian team came with us at the end and saw Gran Turismo. So the day we're recording this, we just put up an absolutely incredible documentary about Gran Turismo Sport and following Kaz around and kind of showing his daily routine and showing why he loves cars. And it's just I don't care about cars, honestly, but that documentary is so gorgeous and pretty. I highly recommend it. We've had some stuff on Knack and Everybody's Golf. And then at the end of this week, we're going to have kind of close out the month with a cool profile of Japan Studio. Yep. And we talked to Shuhei. And we also talked to Alan Becker, who is the head of Japan Studio, who we had never talked to before, which is really cool.
Good work, man.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Exactly the kind of stuff we should be making here.
And that Gran Turismo documentary, I'm in the same boat. I don't know anything about cars, but it's one of the most beautiful things we've ever put on the site.
Yeah,
other than Zach's face.
It's true. It's a good face.
Making burgers.
Getting in there.
Burger boy. Little burger boy. So that was it.
Yeah.
That was it.
No time for rapid fire.
I don't think it's time for rapid fire. We're already at an hour. Yeah.
You want to do one? Let's do one.
Brian.
I'll let Brian.
So the way rapid fire works
because Zach's on here. I wanted to ask this one because this one is really good. We'll save the rest for next week.
Okay.
But Jason, so rapid fire is a thing we do, usually when time permits and we don't ramble for 20 minutes about the state of the industry and all that. You can head on over to the Podcast Beyond Facebook group. That's facebook.com/groups/podcastbeyond or groups.com, a website that works somehow. after that, you can ask this question every single week. I ask you guys for questions and you give me some. Just like Jason Sutton asks, Zach, since you've been in bands and you know more about indie music than anyone I've ever met, which band would make the best subject of a video game.
Well, they already made that game when they made the Beatles Rock Band.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about that Aerosmith game where you shoot CDs.
That was pretty good, too.
Revolution X?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, the Beatles Rock Band did a pretty good job of chronicling the band, like, from the start of their band all the way through to the end, and it had, like, really great visuals and stuff like that. I thought it was really cool. I'm not a huge Rock Band fan, but I played the hell out of that game.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, like, what indie bands would make a really good one?
Yeah, or a band.
So I just got Meet Me in the Bathroom, which is a chronicle of...
the text I sent you.
That's right. Yeah. It's a book that chronicles
down in that butt.
The early 2000s New York rock and roll scene. So like the Strokes, sure, yeah. Pool, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
And I think that would be really fun, like switching between different like indie bands in that era and like... maybe trying to figure out like how you're going to wash your hair or where you're going to score coke or something.
So
like
would
that.
It be like a Telltale style?
Yeah.
Come with that part slide.
Yeah, there are a bunch of very greasy boys and girls in that era.
I've
yeah.
wanted a game, not necessarily about a specific band, but like one of the crappy things I wrote in college was like I was trying to do like a TV show version of Almost Famous or whatever,
yeah.
following a band. I think a game about that would be awesome.
Yeah. Like, so like Rock cool Band 4 did a really cool thing where they had sort of a you start your own band mm-hmm. and you like kind of work your way up through the, you know, the echelons of like, oh, we're playing this grimy club and then we play this like mid-level club and then we're playing like stadium and you had all these different sort of branching paths that was like pretty interesting in terms of like a band simulator, but to like tell a band story like that, yeah, I think it'd be really funny to do like something like that. Or
I want another Def Jam Vendetta game so I can make the Jizza fight Big Pun.
Yeah,
yeah, that was good. Yeah. There's a Wu Tang fighting game.
Yeah,
there's a Dr. Robotnik's Rage Against the Mean Bean Machine. A lot of great games based on. No, back in the 90s, there would have been like this would have been the action platformer. Everything would have been like. Like Home Alone,
yeah.
Two
we
or
would have
like
had
that.
Like, yeah, we would have had a Lord game.
Yeah, yeah. We never got a MC Hammer action platformer.
Also,
right?
whatever happened to that Kanye game?
Oh never yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Took a meeting with
that's
Miyamoto.
That's yeah. yeah. We did an interview. Jose and I did an interview with Miyamoto for Star Fox. We flew to New York to talk to him about Star Fox, and it was the day that Kanye had announced that game. And Miyamoto very casually turned to us and he's like. He showed me that game at E3. I was like, what?
I want to know what that meeting was like.
That would be, oh my God, it'd be a fine.
I want a game about that meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Hey, also, just to plug something else, I have an interview. By the time you're listening to this, there's an interview on the site with Shigeru Miyamoto that I'm very proud of. You can read it to find out if it answers that Kanye question. It doesn't.
It doesn't
answer the Kanye question.
Spoilers.
Hey, Shigeru Miyamoto,
what's wrong
famous
with you?
PlayStation developer.
Yep. yep.
Excellent.
I'm just saying.
Well, there you
sorry
go.
That I'm
you
proud have, of something.
Well, if you want to see when that article comes out, you can follow... us all on Twitter. Andrew is at Garfep. Brian is at Agent Bizzle. Zach is at Zachar ISD. And I'm at McBiggity. You can just
Two T's.
Yep. You can check us out on all sorts of different shows here. I do Unlocked with Alana, which is right. an Xbox show. You guys are gonna be doing more NVC. You do NVC all the time.
Yeah.
I feel like you guys are gonna be
you're
doing
gonna
more.
Be, yeah, you're gonna be seeing my face more on NVC. Yeah.
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 Cool.
yeah.
Don't invite me, it's fine.
We'll invite you too.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
you're on the other platform. You're on our Ouya show called Ooh Yeah.
It's just me saying that alone every week.
Absolutely. And then you can check out all the videos we do on youtube.com/IGN. Awesome.
Yeah.
So for Brian and Andrew and Zach, my name is Marty. This was Beyond episode 499, and we'll see you all next week.
Beyond.
Beyond.
Make the hamburgers.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless... I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode, so search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.